I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Well, thank you, and I always enjoy our time together.
The second step in your investment formula involves the final judgment software to thoroughly analyse chosen properties on an after-tax basis. And what intrigued me was your recommendation to adopt a time frame of only 4 years. Why is that?
It's interesting you raise that, Ken, because I was only recently talking with my mentor group about exactly the same topic. And you see, there are a lot of software packages out there in the marketplace, and they're designed to analyse commercial property. But what they generally do is to look at a property over 7 to 10 years. And most of the packages are designed by techos, and you end up with extraordinary amount of pages printing out to explain or record everything that you've done. And they might be 8 to 10 pages. And, you know, most investors get overwhelmed by that. I mean, they're very sophisticated packages, but they're more than you need. And they tend to, with all that information being generated, give you a false sense of security. And there are a couple of things you've got to consider. And the thing is that, I don't know about you, but I threw my crystal ball away about 3 or 4 years ago, because to be able to project 7 or 8, 9, 10 years out is just unrealistic. Look, if you can do 2, 3, or 4 years out, that's pretty good. And I think you can't really, you're making arbitrary guesses as to what's happening to inflation as far as your expenses are concerned, and also what's likely to happen with market rentals. Now, sometimes they're tied in at fixed percentages, but then you have a market review 4 or 5 years out. And, I mean, it's just, yes, you can make projections, but they're not likely to be very accurate. So I just think it's fraught with danger to go that far out and expect to have a realistic outcome upon which you're then going to make a decision as to whether or not to proceed with the property.
You mentioned there were several reasons.
Yeah, there are a couple of reasons other than those that I've just outlined. And that they probably mainly relate to the fact that you have two times or two points in the ownership of the property where you have the greatest expense. One is when you buy it, and the other is when you sell it. Now, when you buy the property, you've got things like stamp duty, various acquisition costs like legals, valuation, and so forth. And they can add as much as 8% to the purchase price. And the biggest of those being stamp duty at 5.5%. Now, I suggest 8% as a rule of thumb of making it allowance. You'll generally get change out of that. But it's no good when you're making your judgment at the beginning to allow an unrealistic amount of for these acquisition costs. The next major expense, as I said, is when the time comes to sell the property. And those expenses relate to the agent selling commission, advertising and marketing. Again, you've got legals, and of course you've got capital gains tax is paid at that point as well. So my dilemma is that if you choose to spread those costs over 8 to 10 years, the deal is going to look a lot better than it really is, because you see, people's circumstances change. I mean, they get marry, they get divorced, they get transferred overseas or interstate, and whatever. And there might be a reason that you have to sell the property after 4, maybe 5 years. And therefore, what I like to do is to have a 4 or the most 5-year time frame in which you make your analysis, the financial analysis, so that if the property or the numbers add up over a 4 or 5 year time frame where you have your greatest incidence of costs included, then you're going to be comfortable that it's going to look even better over 7 or 8 years. So you need to know that if your circumstances change and you are forced for whatever reason to sell the property after 4 or 5 years, that it makes sense. It all adds up and you're going to make money out of it. It's an illusion to do a 7 or 8 year analysis, as I said, partly through not being able to estimate some of the costs and expenses and likely income, but more importantly, it filters or lessens the impact of your two major expense points by spreading it over a much longer period. So it gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling if it looks good over 7 or 8 years. But the reality is you may, for personal reasons, need to sell it after 4. So it's got to make sense over that shorter time frame. And as I think you know, my rule of thumb is that you need to achieve an after-tax rate of return of at least 10% on the equity that you invest into the property, because that way your calculation is going to provide you with a built-in safeguard of knowing that you're still making money, even if, for whatever reason, you find yourself having to sell the property somewhat earlier than you may have originally planned.
Don't you also recommend to the members of your mentor group that they should undertake a mandatory review of their investment properties?
Yeah, you're right, I do. I recommend that not just my mentor group, but everybody has a mandatory 4-year review on the anniversary or thereabouts of when you purchased the property. And if you want to hold it longer than that, then every 4 years. Now, the way I do the review, or suggest that you do the review, is that you have to decide on the reasons why you should continue to hold the property. If you don't have enough reasons to hold the property, then you should seriously look at selling the property. Now, even though you might make the decision after 4 years, it may well be that you have a rent review coming up in another 6 months' time. Well, obviously, even if you've made the decision that you want to sell the property at the 4-year review, you would then wait another 6 months, review that rent, and it may be a market review or might be an exercise of option, and at that point then put the property on the market at that higher reviewed rent figure. But it's a discipline. I mean, there are a lot of clients I've had over the years that simply buy the property, file it in the filing cabinet, and just collect the rent. They don't even look at it. It may be at the 4-year review that, yes, you should hold the property, but maybe there should be some upgrade or refurbishment that's undertaken. Maybe events have changed in the neighbourhood and a different type of tenant has emerged because the lease is falling due. You need to maybe take steps to find a replacement tenant. I mean, you don't just hang on to a tenant because they're there. If by making some relatively inexpensive upgrades and the market being quite buoyant, you can attract a better caliber of tenant at a higher rental. I mean, that's what owning commercial property is all about, is how can you add value during the period of your ownership? I mean, the market will give you growth, I mean, through increased rents and the firming of selling yields, but you need to be alert and aware for the opportunities to actually add additional, what we call super growth, to the property through doing something clever.
Your yardstick of a 10% after-tax return on equity would seem to be a reasonable outcome?
Well, yes, you would have thought so. I mean, a 10% after-tax return on equity would seem good. But even so, there are some people that initially seem dissatisfied with that. And you need to remember that it is an after-tax return. And therefore, you've got to look at the equivalent pre-tax return, and that'll depend on your tax rate. So, I mean, if your ultimate beneficiary of the income is a company which has a 30% tax rate, that means that your pre-tax return is actually around 14.3% per annum on the equity that you invest in the property. And then, of course, if you're buying it in your own name, where the tax rate is might be the top figure at 45%, then the annual pre-tax return would be closer to 18.2% per annum. And I would have thought, you know, those sort of figures are not too shabby, particularly in the current investment climate. So that's why I work on an after-tax return, and that's after-tax, after income tax, after capital gains tax, the lot, so that you have a simple gauge in which you can make a comparison between properties to, irrespective of their size or what sector they're in, so that you can end up with a single figure to make a sensible commercial judgment.
And just out of interest, how do you gauge the best time to sell?
I think we've probably covered this over a couple of earlier podcasts where we've touched on it several times. But look, in simple terms, you ideally want to buy property during a recession and sell it during an economic boom. This is commercial property. Residential fluctuates depending on interest rates, not necessarily the economy, but commercial property is more related to the economy and a supply of competing commercial space. But as you can appreciate, being able to pick the precise bottom and top of the commercial market is difficult to do. And in this current century, the various capital cities are running at different speeds. And that wasn't the case last century, but it is now, and it's been exacerbated by the global financial crisis. So you need to work out where you are in the cycle. And as I say to people, it's better to sell 6 months early than a month late, because commercial property, unlike shares, you can't sell instantaneously. And if the market is perceived to have turned, generally people will say, well, I'll wait a bit longer before buying it, and maybe the price will drop and fall a little further. And you need to understand, unlike shares, also using that comparison, it's difficult to sell commercial property into a falling market. With shares, all you have to do is reduce the price. There'll always be a buyer. It's just a matter of setting the price at which you can sell the shares. But that's not necessarily the case with commercial property, because people will want to feel that the market, if it is declining, has either bottomed out or will bottom out pretty soon. So as you recall, I always recommend taking that mandatory four-year review of properties. And that's because you need to consciously decide why you need to hold them. And as I said, that's part of the reasoning behind the previous question, and that's why I limit my projected cash flows over that four-year period. Now, if you've got a property that currently has a lease, let's say, of 7 to 10 years, and you feel the cycle is going to peak in 3 years' time, well, there need be no panic to sell. I mean, if you've got a good lease with a solid tenant, you simply ride it out. I mean, the market will return. I mean, there may be advantages. I mean, at least you have a choice in that situation. You know, you may choose to sell in another 3 years' time, take the money, sit out of the market for 12, 18 months, maybe 2 years, and then buy back in again. I mean, that's another way to make money. Instead of buy low, sell high, is to sell high, buy low. So it's a matter of just reading the cycles, and as I said, with a mandatory four-year review, you at least consciously make a decision to either continue to hold or now is the time to sell.
Once again, you've forced our listeners to consider a number of things they may not have otherwise. So, thanks for doing that.
Well, Ken, as you know, it's always a pleasure.